I know I'm far from alone in considering the Right Reverend Gene Robinson a hero of human rights. As the first openly gay bishop installed in the Episcopal Church, he served as both a role model and a leader in the movement for inclusion and celebration of LGBT people in that denomination and far, far beyond that. Busy as ever since his retirement as Bishop of New Hampshire last year, Gene includes a fellowship at the Center for American Progress among his important commitments. Because he's also a keen observer of our culture and society today, I wanted to get his thoughts on what appears to be a boom in Bible-themed motion pictures, and I'm very happy when Gene Robinson is in this studio, and he is today. And Gene, I'm delighted to see you again on State of Belief Radio.
Welton, it's always a pleasure to be with you, and I'm just delighted to be here.
Good. You know, across the years, we've talked about some weighty issues on this show. Today's topic may be a bit lighter, but that doesn't mean that it is insignificant. Do you think we're seeing enough religion theme films lately that we would call it a trend, or is it a cycle, or what is it?
It does seem to me to be somewhat of a cycle. You know, we had some movies in the recent past, Mel Gibson's film, of course, that just made a gazillion dollars. And I think anytime anybody wants to make some money, they know that there is a religious audience out there. And interestingly, this new movie, Son of God, is being promoted not in a traditional sense, but through churches and congregations and various and sundry religious groups. So I do think that we are seeing a resurgence. And of course, the movie Noah has just come out, which I've not seen. But, you know, one of the things that I think is interesting about this round of films is that they are very, very well made. I mean, the visuals are quite dramatic. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're probably seeing a better round of religious films than we're used to seeing in the past.
I interviewed the writer of Noah last week, one of the writers of Noah. And he's getting a lot of criticism because it isn't biblical enough, and then he's getting a lot of criticism because it's too biblical.
Well, that's probably a pretty good sign for him then. It sounds like he came down kind of in the right place.
Yeah, yeah. In this age of social media and endless entertainment choices, do Hollywood movies have the same ability to move culture that they once did?
Maybe even more so. I think our modern social culture is a bit on the lazy side. And so if you can sit down for a couple of hours and get the sweep of scripture, that's a lot easier than actually digging into it. And I guess what I would say about all these movies is I like the book better. You know, you can't go wrong with the scriptures itself. Yeah. But as movies over the past several decades can show, you can go wrong with movies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cecil B. DeMille shaped my early theology.
Mine too. You know, those images are still with me along with the picture books that I had in Sunday school, you know, growing up. And I don't care how sophisticated you get in your theology, those images still come back.
Yeah, they do. They do. Well, some films, like Son of God or the movie that was shown at CPAC, Persecuted, are promoted in conservative religious communities, as you've already mentioned. Churchgoers are asked to commit to see the movie, to help pay for the distribution of the movie. Noah was a different matter, but this was a bona fide hit. So tell me, Gene, is this outreach to churches evangelical or economical?
Well, you could never take the economics out of it, right? I mean, there's just too much money involved. On the other hand, I do think that at their best, these movies are trying to communicate images and stories that are central to the faith. I mean, the difference, I think, between Noah and Son of God is that you've got a rather sparse story with Noah. Mm-hmm. And so you have a lot more leeway to fill in the gaps. And most stories of the life of Jesus have followed a very linear approach. Several of them have committed themselves to only having Jesus say what we have a record of Jesus saying in Scripture. This latest one, Son of God, fills in a lot more of the gaps, and I think is very, very interesting in doing so. The danger there, of course, is whoever's doing the writing is doing the filling in of the gaps.
Yeah.
Now, whether the viewing public will, in their minds, think they heard those things in Scripture or not, I don't know. Depends, I guess, on how well they know their Bibles.
Yeah.
And some of it is actually quite winning. I think my favorite scene in Son of God is Jesus is in a boat with Peter fishing. This is when he calls Peter to be his follower, mm-hmm. which, as I recall in Scripture, Jesus is not in the boat but on the shore.
Yeah.
But there are three lines that I just love. So Jesus says to Peter, I'm giving you the chance to change your life. And Peter says, what are we going to do? And Jesus says, change the world. Now, that is not in Scripture,
no.
But I think it does capture the kind of curiosity that these men who were called to be disciples must have felt. You know, they must have had this sense of being with someone who was really quite out of the ordinary and quite forward-thinking and adventurous and risk-taking, because there had to be something in the person of Jesus that made them want to drop everything and follow him. And I thought that little dialogue that was clearly just made up by a writer captured some of what we don't know about the decision-making for Peter and the other disciples.
I'm thinking about the power behind storytelling through film. And depending on how a story is told, it can influence someone. Like we said, Cecil B. DeMille had influenced us and all of those images. What's the best movie you ever saw?
My favorite movie in the whole world is Shawshank Redemption.
Mm. And why?
I think it was a Jesus story. So, I'm a sap for Jesus stories because that's what my life is all about. Mm. Redemption is in the title and redemption is in the plot.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes with a sort of an anti-hero at the helm.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a very unlikely hero who suffers greatly and overcomes the evil that affects him. I just think it's an incredibly powerful story about the human spirit and is a reflection of the kind of story that we see in the life of Jesus.
I was going to say, am I wrong in saying that the best religious movies, the best biblical movies I've ever seen were not about the Bible or about a Bible story?
I just couldn't agree more. That is so true. And part of the reason, I think, is let's remember that the Jesus event was a lot more than we have descriptions of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so every time you try to make a biblical movie, let's say about the life of Jesus, you're stuck with sticking to the text itself. Or you're on your own and you're making stuff up as you go along. And neither actually gets at the reality of whatever that Jesus event was.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you take a mystery and you try to make it concrete, you limit the mystery.
Yeah.
And so I think ultimately these biblical movies are doomed to fail, at least as far as, let's say, capturing the historical Jesus.
Right.
That has been the quest of humankind ever since Jesus was here 2,000 years ago. And every time you try to take that mystery, which has been communicated to us not just by Scripture but by countless generations of Christians telling that story, every time you try to tie it down, you diminish it.
Yeah.
And so I think in some ways non-religious movies – can be a greater reflection of that mystery than some depiction of the events that are recorded in the Bible.
If you were going to use a Bible story to make a big-budget Hollywood movie, what story would you tell?
Well, so the one I would long to tell is my favorite story in all of Scripture. It only occurs in one of the Gospels. Thank goodness for the Gospel of Luke. It's the story of the prodigal son. And this is one of those stories, of course, that happens in all kinds of movies, right? I mean, we see it reflected in all kinds of ways. One of my favorite ballets is The Prodigal Son. And I saw Edward Villella dance it with the New York City Ballet once. And I'll never forget the ending of this, you know, this magnificent specimen of humankind, Edward Villella, at the end of this, is standing or crawling, really, to his father, who is there with outstretched arms and robes covering him. And Villella literally crawls up his father's body and puts his arms around his neck and goes into a fetal position. And the father just envelops him in his robes until he completely disappears. Now, that's the coming home that I think we all long for in our belief in God, however described, however imaged in our worship and so on. So that's the story I love to see on film and non-religious films. And I think it's fruitful enough that someone could do something with it.
Yeah.
In fact, if you just want to give me $20, $30 million, I'd be willing to give it a try.
Well, let me check my bank book. We've got Gene, when we spoke right before your retirement, you were talking about your plans for peacemaking and activism here in Washington. Can I ask you to update us on that?
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm loving Washington, D.C., notwithstanding the Congress, which is driving us all crazy. I love the city for its openness, not just of its architecture. You know, we have a height restriction here in Washington, which gives the city a kind of manageable scale that I think most of our cities with skyscrapers don't have. I'm loving my work at the Center for American Progress. There are just some incredibly smart people doing important work here, and to keep up with them, I have to row pretty hard, and I love that. Yeah. Also, I think the thing that I'm finding exciting is that in the fairly recent past, we've all been siloed into our own areas of concern and activity, and here at the Center for American Progress, as well, I think, in the culture, we are seeing intersectionality as the real foundation of our moving forward, so that we're beginning to see the connections with all kinds of oppression. The oppression may be different, but the dynamics of oppression and indeed trying to diminish that oppression are very, very similar. So we're seeing ethnic and racial groups and sexual orientation groups and immigration groups and all kinds of people beginning to work together in ways that I think are quite remarkable. And a great example of that was when the people were fasting for immigration reform on the Mall here in Washington. I was astounded by the number of sort of issue groups that ostensibly aren't related to immigration at all, who showed up to support and to join the fast and so on. So that kind of interdisciplinary, intersectional work is just very, very exciting to me.
Getting back to the film Son of God, I know you spent a lot of time looking at it, thinking about it. Is there in that film points that touch the realities that we face in our society and give its viewers hope that there is help from beyond for this mess we're in?
I had a number of disappointments with the film.
Tell us about it.
Yeah. I guess it's just Hollywood, right? At some point, I would like to see a reasonably unattractive Jesus. You know, having a young, handsome hottie playing Jesus is just Hollywood's way, right? But at least in this film, biblical Palestine was a dirty place, and I like that kind of realism, which I haven't seen since The Last Temptation of Christ, which was kind of a silly movie in some ways, but at least it was earthy and real. One of my disappointments in this film is you see almost no portrayal of Jesus reaching out to the poor, the dispossessed, the marginalized. Almost none of the miracles are there. You don't hear Jesus telling the stories for which he was known far and wide, and stories which are told to this day with great power. So it focuses more on the events of his life, and as is often the case, the Via Dolorosa, the Way of the Cross, is quite long and extended and gory and violent, and it seems to me that a proper and balanced view of Jesus would have at least shown him reaching out and healing people and restoring them in both emotional and physical and as well as spiritual ways. Mm-hmm. I'm also just stunned that the Last Supper and the events and the quite remarkable conversation that Jesus has with his disciples at the Last Supper mm-hmm. plays virtually no part in this film at all, mm-hmm. which for me, where communion is so important in my own life, yeah. I cannot imagine telling the story without that part in it. Yeah. So it's mystifying in a lot of ways. It's kind of refreshing. It's not told in a linear fashion. Jesus has flashed forwards and flashed backwards. And I kept thinking some of the events I was looking for might come up in a flashback, but that didn't turn out to be the case. I think that it's interesting also that this film is called The Son of God and not The Son of Man, which was Jesus' preferred reference for himself, if he referred to himself at all. Mm-hmm. And as you well know, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, you can make the case that Jesus didn't know who he was. Mm-hmm. It's the old Watergate case, right? What did he know and when did he know it? Yeah. If you read the Gospel of John, John sort of gives it away at the very beginning. I'm going to tell you about this guy and he was God and I'm going to prove it to you. Mm-hmm. But in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, Jesus is very much more struggling to figure that out the way we do, yeah. which is important to me because yeah. if Jesus was indeed human, then he struggled the way we do. And I take that great comfort from that. So there's nothing of that struggle in this film. And that way it's very John-like, mm-hmm. except, of course, that the greatest part of John's gospel takes place at the Last Supper. Right. So it's this very kind of mix of being faithful to the scriptures, but not portraying a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And I would go as far as to say that the writer of the Gospel of Luke would not have recognized this Jesus because, of course, Luke was written for outsiders sure. and has all of those wonderful stories about Jesus reaching out to the marginalized, and they're almost absent in this film. That all being said, I enjoyed it. I once, when I was a seminarian working with a youth group, put together a slideshow of maybe 50 representations of Jesus in art mm. and encouraged the kids in my youth group to tell me what they learned about Jesus from that particular piece of art. Mm-hmm. And so I think the best way to look at these quote-unquote religious movies, especially mm-hmm. those about the life of Jesus, is just understand that it's one person's reflections on that life. And even if we put all those movies and all those reflections together, we still wouldn't be back to that event itself.
Yeah.
That did change the world.
We're headed toward Easter, the Christian festival. What's the message you want people to hear this year about Easter?
I think, especially perhaps here in America, we are proceeding along the lines of it's every man, woman, and child for themselves. You see that in the budgets that are being presented in Congress, in the cuts to food stamps and unemployment benefits and so on. It seems to me that the message of Easter is that God is with us, but that God demands something of us, and that we at least make a good faith effort to love others the way we love ourselves. And in that process, God will be with us no matter what, and not even death can separate us from that God.
The Right Reverend Gene Robinson is the retired Episcopal Bishop of New Hampshire and a globally respected leader in the struggle for LGBT rights. He's a fellow at the Center for American Progress and a treasured friend of mine. And Gene, I'm so glad you were able to take time and be with us today here on State of Belief Radio.
Thanks so much, and an early happy Easter.
Same to you.